Hey, Haven Earth family, this is Imani Mamalushin, and I am with Lucinda from Texas Ready at her homestead in East Texas called Centurion Farm. And right now we're in the community garden, and I would love for you to share, Lucinda, a little bit about what you have going on here, because the hands-on approach is what I think is so critical, important.
That's where people can go and replicate what they're trying out here in their own backyards. We've got 25 families that have decided to grow their own food this year, which is fabulous.
Amazing.
It's not always that easy, right? So they come and they bring their samples, their leaves. They show me their bugs that are attacking. And then we show them solutions. Like you can maybe hear the sound of the whirling machine. We're taking some diatomaceous earth. Which is perfectly organic, and we're applying it to some insects that we found this morning, not happily, but this will solve that problem.
So natural solutions.
Correct.
And it's not just in the garden. I mean, you guys are covering all the homesteading basics. I know we purchased your set of, I think it was the, which one did we get? The treasury,
Which is enough for 30 people, but you
non-GMO heirloom seeds.
Right. But you also got a book in there that is called The Backyard Homestead, which talks about how to raise chickens for eggs or meat, how to do cheese. You might need a goat if you're going to do that. So on this homestead, we have 5 or 6 different types of animals because we believe in down economy. If we're not going to HEB, Kroger's, et cetera, for our food, we do not want food fatigue. So we need that variety for our health and for different usages of those animals. For example, I use my goats to clear out and give me a visual on a plot of land.
When I came in, you said that when you came here about 20 years ago?
2001, I closed on this property.
Okay, and it looked like this forest over here.
Complete
forest.
And so everything you see, we've kind of, in a permaculture manner, planned. And, you know, there always are changes to the artist palette. And the same thing with a homestead. But in the main, we know that this place is going to be able to support 30, 40 people. And we've organized everything to make that happen.
And I want to dive in a little bit to the Mittlighter gardening tactics that you use. And is that specifically with the homesteading? Because you were learning as you were going, right?
I was actually teaching at Lone Star College, and I ended up teaching 39 different methods. But in the course of that college level, you know, community college level, I just realized this is not going to work in a down economy. You know, if you still could go and get a burger or something someplace and pay that money, okay, this is nice hobby gardening, but that is not what we are facing.
So the Mittlighter is specifically about concentration of
mineralization. And so I also had to have a technique that was going to work in Maine and Arizona because I was traveling all over the United States speaking about gardening. And I mean, let's just talk about the one that's very prevalent from the Oregon area. A very interesting guy, and I'm sure he is very well-meaning, the Back to Eden approach. Well, that works wonderful where you get rain every other day and the wood chips break down, etc. It doesn't work in this neck of the woods. It produces fungal diseases and little places for insects to hide and that kind of thing. And so we had to have a survival gardening method. So everybody's heard of hydroponics. That is where we put something into the water supply, we mineralize in the water supply, and then the roots of that plant will be able to produce the tomatoes or melons or whatever it is you're growing. And so Mittlighter is virtually dirt hydroponics. We top dress and provide minerals for our beds, and we're able to get extremely quick production and nutrient dense production that's predictable. That's what
predictable production. I like that. So I know when we got our kit, we also got those bags of minerals.
That's right.
And also I'm looking, you know, I can see the different ways that the beds are spaced.
That's right.
And that you have the watering system over that.
Right.
So that's where.
So let me show you this. So we water 1 minute in the morning and 1 minute at night, saving 40% water. And in a desert environment, that is critical. In a down economy, that will be critical.
Mm-hmm.
We're operating off of a well system. What
yeah.
we need to do,
and the white stuff on there is the minerals, right?
That's top dressing. Mm-hmm. And you can see there's quite a bit of pressure that's driving that into the root zone. We don't put it close to the stem because we don't want to burn the stem, of course. But at the end of a week, that'll be 14 waterings. It'll be, you know, ground neutral, and the plant will have uptaken all those minerals. So mm-hmm. there's no possibility of toxicity because we space everything according to how much uptake those roots are going to be doing in the ensuing week. And so people that have gardened Mittlighter in the same space for over 20 years can do a soil report that comes out ground neutral. There's no toxicity. Mm-hmm. So it's been a really wonderful system, and it's the only quantifiably organic system. And anytime I'm just going straight away bed to bed with an organic person, I can outproduce them 2-1,
wow.
3-1, 4-1. Now look at this beautiful array of tomatoes. You can see every single plant practically has something that I'm going to pick today. They're healthy plants. Bugs are at a minimum in this kind of a garden because healthy plants exude a pheromone that repels insects. God sends bugs to get rid of weak and infirm plants that are in the garden.
Mm.
Little known fact, right? Mm. And then, you know, people say, well, let's throw seven dust and other poisons on it, not understanding that you and I end up eating that tomato, which systemically, all the way through that entire vegetable, now it has that poison. I don't put that stuff on my family's plates. And so we love the Mittlighter thing because it's definitely an organic system. Every ingredient that organic farmers use has to be in the OMRI directory of supplies. All the trace elements that come in the mineral pack we got you, Imani,
yeah.
those are all in that note, in that very same notebook.
So. Yeah, and I love that that you actually explained that, because I know that's one of the questions that comes up is like, is that this Mittlighter method organic? So that was a great explanation.
It's quantifiably organic. In other words, the organic farmer does a bunch of amendments or they add supplements, but if you were if you had children at home and you had a great Thanksgiving dinner, great Christmas dinner, I would not, and you let the kids eat junk food all year.
Right.
That is not a good mother, right?
Right.
Because that's only 2 great meals. And that is actually how most organic farmers
garden. Interesting.
There is a big myth that organic farmers don't use any chemistry. Nothing could be farther from the truth. They actually use more.
Interesting.
They just don't use it in the right timing and in the right format. Now, organic molecules cannot be received or uptaken by plant roots. They only receive nutrition in an inorganic matter. So they have to get way back to the original shaved rock kind of chemical composition. And so my stuff is immediately useful to the plant from day one, whereas if you do composting, et cetera, which is a great way to go to the chiropractor, by the way.
Yep.
Those are not the nutrition that might be in that compost heap, which you can't tell me what's in there, by the way. That's a problem. I can always tell you what we are feeding the plant because of the way we mineralize.
Right.
But those, and every time you do a compost heap, you get a different recipe.
Yeah. And I mean, and so it's quite scientific. I love that you actually have done a lot of gardening, Lucinda, and come to this conclusion,
yes,
right?
That's right.
And so you're saving us all a lot of time,
do,
right?
Okay, money and time. Okay, yes. I spent 10 years trying to find a holy grail, and when I found it, it was just such a relief. And thank you, Jesus.
Yeah. So yeah, and this is why your information needs to get out there.
Right.
So important right now during these times. Can you explain the spacing of the bed? Usually,
Absolutely.
People see like.
Sure.
A garden with, you know, everything here, but there's a sense of organization and science, like a strategy.
Okay. Two, most insects, stink bugs, squash bugs, and grasshoppers accept them. 5 feet is really crossing the Sahara with no water.
Wow. Okay.
So we have a 5-foot buffer all the way around the entire garden. And then you'll see I do have 5 feet down the center aisle just because we're going to have wheelbarrows, et cetera. We just know that.
Right.
Okay.
So it's easy to maneuver, but I didn't know the bug thing. So the bugs don't like the distance.
They don't like the distance. So
okay.
You have a lot less bugs. Now then, in between the 4-foot bed, which in our mind is really 2 18-inch beds put together, and we're saving wood, by not having a separate deal. It's really two 18-inch beds that are slapped together with a 6-inch no man's land. We have 3.5 feet down the center, again, allowing two people to work, one to harvest here, one to harvest here.
Mm-hmm.
They won't get anybody's way. And
efficiency, I like
very
it.
Very efficient. Yeah. Right, so 7.5 feet per bed. Now, the maximum length would be 30 feet. Because, again, it's a pressure waterized system,
mm-hmm.
and over 30 feet, you're just not going to get enough to drive that nutrition into the ground, right?
So how do you create that pressure?
Well, it either comes from your house spigot that you tap into, or in my case, I have a well.
Okay.
But it's the length, it gets less and less efficient the longer it is. So 30 foot is what we found.
And one of the classes you're going to do is on how to build these beds and systems. So that would be something that would be... See it from the beginning. Yeah, I love it.
And one of the things is we do garden three-dimensionally.
Okay.
These tomatoes will be over 7 feet in another month and a half.
Wow.
And they will produce until mid-October when we have our
here in Texas.
Cross.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're really.
But like you said, this method could be in any
culture,
any region. Yeah.
We have 55 years of data on 5 continents in
Amazing.
All weather patterns.
Amazing.
Antarctica accepted, you know. But, you know, any place that can grow a seed, whether it's a 95-day in Bangor, Maine, or Florida, or Arizona, and if you're in high altitude, Colorado, Utah, Nevada, et cetera, this is the only method that is very productive.
This is, you know, as we kind of put together the Haven Earth Hubs in these different regions, I think this is going to be part of the great experiment. And we look forward to having you and your wisdom on the Haven Earth Network platform, because we have all those areas that we're pulling from, and we can all learn from each other, right?
That's
I mean, that's
right.
The that's importance right. of this is creating this support system
that's right.
so that we can all, we're all in this together. But like you said, you know, we said when I first got here, it's about who shows up, right?
Right.
Who
and so
shows up and really gets their hands in the dirt.
Is going to be getting the emails and response, you know, in a more timely way. I will, of course, help anybody. You don't even have to be my customer. I just want anybody that wants to grow in America doing it.
But I do encourage people to get seeds from Texas
well,
ready.
I am up for that. Right?
Yeah.
Because I actually know what went into that. I believe that they are the very best seed bank in the country. And seeds are at a big premium right now. They're hard to find.
Yeah.
And we certify our seeds, which means I pay more for my seeds. What that means is the farmer has to have an independent lab. It'll cost him $800 per crop. Has to be done every 6 months so we can ensure the freshness, the germination, the toxicity of any noxious weeds that perhaps were blown in, which would decrease germination.
It's incredible. I remember reading, or we talked about one of the germination rate, because people have asked me, well, okay, I bought that pack. Like we were just with the land steward and Tennessee, and she's like, I bought it last year. Like, how long do we have before we use these seeds?
That is a great question. And we have done everything in our packaging to make it as high germination for you guys as possible. The one thing that we cannot control is what you can control, which is the temperature that you store your seed bank.
Yeah.
We advise take the books out, take your fertilizer out, but leave the seed packets in, because there's a seal
mm-hmm.
that keeps moisture out, which is an important thing. We don't want excess moisture to
right.
decrease germination. But 40 degrees, that's the cranky refrigerator for beer and parties.
Okay,
garage,
so pretty cool.
40 degrees.
Now,
not freezing.
So do not freeze them?
Don't freeze them.
Don't
freezing
freeze
works
them.
Works for peas, bean, corn, some hard
But not milk, everything.
But not everything. And so your
Great.
Fragile little herb seeds and lettuce seeds, there's
will not
water
do well.
In the hull, 9% water in the hull.
Okay.
But we put it in an ice chest or something, and then what happens?
Water yep, you get
expands,
the moisture. Exactly.
The hull. Yeah.
So good to know, because literally we were just having this conversation, and
we're
carrying around our
internet.
Box, so we want to know exactly from the source, like how we can guide people, because, I mean, is it with what's coming, you know, what we are aware of, what's down the line, I mean, how much should people stock up on seeds? Like, you know, we got the 30 person a year
right.
kit. Is that something?
Here's what I always say is if you have never gardened and gotten 2,000 pounds of food a year, then you really need some backup in case there's a hailstorm or something. You need some backup.
Okay.
So we would err on the side of caution. The very first question, though, that you need to ask is, how many people will I let in the door? How many people that are going to cross my porch,
right,
am I going to welcome into my tribe? Because we will be doing multi-generational and multi-family units for protection and so forth.
Yeah,
and
I think people have that idea.
That's right.
And just on that note, because we've been talking to so many people, you know, we were at Exit and Build, and there were a lot of visits to homesteads, and there were a lot of people out there that kind of doing it themselves.
That's right.
And I think that's
not going to make it.
Exactly.
Because they have got to sweep.
Right.
Okay.
Or something could happen.
If you fall out of the orchard and you break your arm, now what are you going to do?
So you think that sweet spot is like 30 people?
I would say 10 to 30. Because you're really not going to get all the jobs done that need to happen.
Right.
So you're going to need someone that's kind of a captain,
And we're talking for food production.
Well, I'm talking about all the different tasks that a homesteading group might need to do. You're going to need some medical. You're going to need.
Because we're saying at least 30 people. I mean,
I think that's wise.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's wise.
We're actually even moving beyond that to like, but we're looking at households, right?
Absolutely.
So 10 households, you know. Right. Where you have it, and then we are bringing in that multi-generational. We're teaching the children, and we're raising them. But I love your approach, because we heard, you know, when I asked everybody what they learned from Exit and Build that had come to our hemp tour, it was like the one thing that kept ringing through is, do not do it alone. Don't do it by yourself. Don't think that you can do it all. You can learn it all. I mean, that we need each other.
Absolutely. We're designed for community. That's how God put our persons together. And so it's the people that are getting in the wagon train and going out west together. It was true then. It's true for us now.
It's like the modern day pilgrimage for
absolutely
sure. We're the, well, we like to call ourselves the hempeneers, but we're pioneering this new way. We're getting in our version of our wagons and getting on the road. I appreciate everything that you're doing, Lucinda, and sharing your information.
So good to have you here.
Being here is incredible. Experiencing it, feeling it firsthand. It really is inspiring and just gives an incredible sense of hope. And just appreciate you so much.
And if you just turn around and take a little picture of these guys here, this is what has brought me so much joy.
So these are the people that show up at your community garden every Wednesday.
That's
and
right.
Some Sundays. And you guys have been doing not just the growing, but I want to actually do a little tour over where the animals
absolutely
are. And we can do that, because it's a full system that you have
that's
going
right
on here. And
that's right.
Yep, can't do it without each other. So website is just texasready.net.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll put the link on here.
Perfect.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Mm-hmm.